A salute to radio. WBAA is a special feature program in celebration of its 30th year of broadcasting to the people of Indiana presents A Salute to Radio, the story of radio and how it happened.
That was radio 30 years ago. Purdue Radio, WBAA, as it celebrated its 30th anniversary on April 4th, 1952. And this is the music of the 1920s. Paul Whiteman and his orchestra with Whispering, the type of music that was heard on WBAA almost 60 years ago. Music to remember 60 years of Purdue Radio. In this program, we'll step back in time and take a look at the people and programs that shaped this radio station. People and programs that kept it going longer than any other radio station in Indiana. 60 years, from April 4th, 1922 to April 4th of 1982. The story actually goes back to 1910, when early experimental work was done on code equipment by students and staff in electrical engineering. Those experiments continued into the World War I period, when the Army Signal Corps began class instruction in radio, and the government gave the university some valuable broadcast equipment. By 1919, the government had licensed code station 9YB here at Purdue. Now, you have to remember that none of this was voice transmission. It was merely sending Morse code without telegraph wires. But experiments in voice transmission began in 1921. And finally, on April 4th, 1922, the government issued a license to the station for broadcasting privileges. Again, you have to realize it was totally unlike modern broadcasting. Irregular hours of broadcast, few if any regular programs, and experimental equipment were the rule rather than the exception. It was more like ham radio than a modern broadcast operation. Tom Johnston was the head of public information at that time, and WBAA was partially his idea. He later became manager of the radio station. And on the 40th anniversary, 20 years ago, he remembered those early days with Jim Miles.
As asked by Professor R.V. Ockitz, who had the original idea for the station. Ockitz was professor of electrical engineering and was interested in radio. He taught the courses in communications. And radio hadn't come into being yet as an agency like as it is today. It was just barely starting. We had to use headphones. And the days of headphones, many folks, particularly older people, remember the days they had to search around with little crystal sets, trying to find this station or that station on the air. Well, he started the station, had the idea as a means of communication with the people of the state. I had developed the informational service, relations only to agriculture first, and then the whole university, to tell the story of Purdue, to interpret the work being done by Purdue, the people of the state. And he had the idea of why not use radio. So he started the station in the basement of what was formerly the Electrical Engineering Building. It stood, it was built in 1889, and stood where the present chemistry building now stands on the campus at Purdue. He had a little room there, about 12 by 14 feet, had a little transmitter, 250 watts was the power, and instituted programs Monday night and Friday night. Those were the only times during the week that were on the air. One-half-hour programs devoted to agriculture. There's some of the larger stations over the country had been started before that time, and their first attempt was to reach, be of service to the field of agriculture. So Ockett's had that say, although an electrical engineering prof, he had the idea of making it of service to the farmers of Indiana. That was my first attempt to broadcast, tell the story of Purdue, something new and unusual, in the field of agriculture. We did not attempt to get into the general field of broadcasting for two or three years, only two nights a week, as I said, Monday and Friday. We advertised that through the press and over the broadcasts themselves. Folks were fishing around in the air at that time with those crystal sets trying to get this station, WBA. I remember one lady said to me, she got Purdue Station, was quite thrilled to get it. She said she refused to get a set, however, for probably 4 or 5 years, a farm wife, Professor B.H. Duddleson. She said, if I had known this music and the programs I hear from KDKA and WGN, other stations in Chicago, KDKA at Pittsburgh, other stations had been floating, this music had been floating around over our barn lot, I'd have bought this set when it first started.
I know we were all excited about it when we knew Purdue was going to have a radio station, and as soon as we had our radio, which was, I'm sure, not too long after, well, of course, we always waited and listened for the programs which came from Purdue. If the people who came to our house to listen night after night after night when we first got ours is any indication, well, everyone was really very excited about it.
That was Mrs. O.L. McKay of Romney, an early listener of WBAA. Another early fan was the Reverend Louis Westenbarger.
Well, it was during the winter of 1921-22, sometime in early 22, we were sitting over at the dormitory at the Widener Institute. That was a junior college at Mulberry, Indiana. And that's just 10 miles from Lafayette. And I remember Mr. William Downey, who was a caretaker there at the school, had a radio outfit in his apartment. And the students would go in there, and he had two sets of earphones. And we would, maybe four of us, each of us take one earphone and listen to what was coming over. And I remember that one of the stations that he had on quite frequently was the Lafayette station. I know one time we students tried an experiment. We took a mixing bowl and laid the receivers down in the mixing bowl, and then a whole bunch of us got around the mixing bowl and listened. I remember at that time there was band music coming from the Purdue station.
They tried that with pots and pans, too.
Mm-hmm.
That same thing. It doesn't help too much.
And I remember one student, a student in the physics class there, he said that the time would come when it would come out of a horn and everybody would hear it all over the room. And I couldn't understand how that could ever be possible.
What was the general public reaction to radio in those days? Was it a toy, or did they think anything worthwhile would come from it?
Well, I think the people around Mulberry in those days thought it was more or less of a novelty and probably soon wear off.
So even in those early days, when radio sets were not too plentiful, WBAA did have its listeners, and it started building up its programming at the same time. As Tom Johnston mentioned, the early goal for the station was to present ag information to the state. On the 40th anniversary show, Ace Tyler talked with Emil Pence, an early ag announcer on WBAA.
The institution was going ahead with this, and the agriculture department, I think, was about as active as anybody here in going on WBAA. And so we sort of took our turns by departments, I think, at the instance of Tommy Johnson and the Department of Information, and I think he was sort of heading up the broadcasting at that time, as I recall it.
Well, Tommy knew how to stir things up along
the line.
Well,
you couldn't turn Tommy down, no. He was too good a fella, you know.
Well, what was the first thing you talked about on the radio?
Well, I think maybe I talked about alfalfa the first time, Horace, and we had it in the old electrical building over here that's now... It has disappeared and replaced by this new modern chemistry building over here on the campus. I want to say it was a weird experience to... You've been used to talking to people. And there you went in and just talked in a little screened affair, you know. And I don't know. I can't describe the experience one has the first time. Probably today it wouldn't be that way because it's such a common medium of communication. But then, of course, it was unique and it was new and... That was weird.
Well, did you feel as if you were simply talking into outer space, or did you have some sort of audience visualized that you
were addressing? That was the weird part of it. You just wondered, is anybody listening? How many are listening? And how is this going over? Yes.
What sort of apparatus did you face when you went into the studio?
Well, it was a very small mic, and it looked to me about like a Bunsen burner with a screen on top of it, and that's what we used for the mic.
Well, what kind of broadcasting techniques were used? Did you get some kind of an introduction, or did you?
I think we were introduced, and practically, I think most of us had a script. We had it written out. We didn't have any impromptu or ad lib very much, and we just read a statement or a script.
But we weren't merely an agricultural station. We also had music in that time period. Some of it was live, in fact. Former mechanical engineering dean Harry Solberg was a student when he showed a different side to the listeners in the 1920s.
Well, my first contact with WBAA must have been in the early 1920s. I don't remember just when, but a group of us had a little orchestra. I played the clarinet. And so we broadcast a program one day. We had a battered piano, and the center from which we broadcasted, the studio, consisted of an open spot in the middle of the power laboratory in the electrical engineering school.
Must have been interesting. It was a live broadcast?
Oh, yes, it was a live broadcast, sure. They didn't... I don't think they recorded anything. It was done live in those days.
What was it like trying to perform on radio during those days?
Well, all we did was sit around the piano and play like we were playing at home.
Must have been strange.
There was no timing, and of course there was no soundproofing and this sort of thing. It was just occupying space in the laboratory.
And of course news was important. Former history professor Frank Hall was an early newscaster on the station.
Years ago, it was a weekly news summary known as Footnotes on the Headlines. The station was then on the top floor of the EE building. Professor Stafford was director of the station then. I remember one afternoon it was my privilege to share part of my hour with the famous old radio team of Lum and Ebner. They were in town for, I suppose, the Tippecanoe County Fair or something like that. Somebody persuaded them, probably without too much trouble, to come up and give a few minutes to WBAA. Lum said, "We're right proud to be here." Later, we had a series on the air for the school children of the state. We used to put a number of classes on the air, directly from the classroom. On the first floor of the Restation building, many of the rooms were wired for radio, rather crudely, all the wiring and everything right out in the open, subject to some tampering occasionally.
And Homer Allen was a Johnny DeCamp predecessor in sports announcing.
So, as you can guess, it was pretty much of a hit-or-miss informal thing. But I had a lot of fun at it, and, of course, the old West Side press box in the west side of the stadium was not nearly the same as it is today, but it was roomy enough for two or three of us that were in there on the games. And I recall how President Elliott used to come up in the booth there between the halves of the home football games to kind of get away from the crowd, I think. and invariably I would ask him to make a few comments. Then the basketball booth in the old men's gym, which is now the women's gym, of course, was about a 4x4 box suspended on one edge of the balcony, the running track that ran around that old gym. There was just room in there for the engineer and the announcer. And believe me, it got pretty hot in there sometimes when we had the gym packed and there was a hot game going on. But as a matter of fact, I recall in order to see down to our right in the corner, we had to actually get our face right against the front window in order to peek down there when anybody was in that corner with the ball.
But while the programming was growing, WBAA was also becoming a more solid operation. In the 1930s, a number of other educational stations went off the air due to financial problems and pressure from commercial broadcasters. But WBAA survived. There were changes in power and in frequency, and there was some shared time with other radio stations. But WBAA actually thrived in the difficult period of the 1930s. By 1941, things were pretty well in place. The station had moved into its new home in the Hall of Music. It increased its power to 5,000 watts daytime, 1,000 watts at night. And it found a permanent home on the AM dial at 920. And the programming exploded through the 1940s with the advent of the School of the Air.
It's radio time with the Purdue University School of the Air. Hear the merry tinkle of the music box, boys and girls? Well, it introduces Mrs. William P. Heath and her magic music box. Each Wednesday at this time, Mrs. Heath brings you stories and songs from the world of music. And today, Mrs. Heath is going to tell you about Easter music. And here she is.
Hello, boys and girls.
It's radio time with the Purdue University School of the Air, and it's Lady Storyteller time. Each week at this time, the Purdue University School of the Air presents Lady Storyteller with another tale of adventure, fun, or fancy. Today, Lady Storyteller is going to tell us a story called Dexter the Dragon. And now, here she is.
Hello, boys and girls. Yes, our story today is about a dragon called Dexter, and he was a two-headed dragon.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another discussion by high school students. This morning, our question, should high schools do more for students' personal problems? And our high school student guest this morning, Norman Vellor of Jefferson High School, Hazel Ganot of St. Francis High School, Pat Albjerg of West Lafayette High School, and our special guest this morning, Tom Clapper of Monticello High School, Monticello, Indiana. Are there any students listening in probably this morning at Monticello? Are you going to listen in?
No, I don't think so.
First, we should tell you people that we are doing this program before the Purdue Guidance Conference being held here in the Purdue Union Building on the campus of Purdue University.
Good morning, biology students and teachers. Ask the Biologist is on the air. Today, we have two guests with us. Dr. John S. Carling, head of the Department of Biological Sciences, whom you met last week, is back again, along with another of Purdue's research specialists, Dr. Henry Koffler, bacteriologist in the Department of Biological Sciences.
Radio Stage presents The Ugliest Man in the World by Arch Obler.
Let us try to find the influences which underlie the present Russian agricultural organization. There are two main factors. The first is the natural factors, second, the human factors.
Mm-hmm.
met her in Venezuela with a basket on her head. If she loved her, she didn't say, but I knew she'd do.
At this time, WBAA presents a transcribed program prepared by Vern Pulling, popular singer of ballads and simple songs of the people. Accompanying himself on the auto harp, Mr. Pulling not only sings, but gives you a few explanatory words about each song. And now here's Vern.
It's Your Nickel. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jim Miles, transcribed today, with the program of This and That. Mostly this today, after our discussion with Ed Hill yesterday on Navy and all the things it stands for. Well, maybe it's just well we are talking about this today.
The Purdue University School of the Air presents Mathematics is Where You Find It, a series of talks on the popular phases of mathematics, prepared and presented by Walter H. Carnahan of the Mathematics Department. Today, Mr. Carnahan talks about mathematics pastimes for everyone.
Thank you. Good morning, students. Yes, we're all set with the discussion on producing quality milk on the farm. And as you've been told, we have with us G.A. Williams, Purdue University Extension Dairyman.
You are born. The air rushes into your lungs. You cough and give off a cry of life. You are born, and the fascinating, complicated miracle of growth prepares you through the first few years of life. These are the years which will form the foundation of your life, determining to a large extent the kind of person you will be. And yet, for the most part, they'll spell out a blank space in your memory. You'll remember little, if anything, that happened to you. So you'll not know and understand the sounds, the voices, the world of the child as he sees, hears, smells, and touches it. That's why you were born 49 seconds ago on our We Human Beings program, so that you can relive those earlier years as the child lives them.
And today it's time for History Highlights. Each week at this time, the Purdue University School of the Air brings you an exciting chapter from the pages of history.
It's radio time with the Purdue University School of the Air, and time to listen to the story of you. This is you.
WBAA presents sixth grade Spanish. Yes, lessons in Spanish for children in the elementary grades 4 to 7. This program is brought to you through the cooperation of the Purdue Department of Modern Languages and the West Lafayette Public Schools, where considerable work is being done in teaching Spanish in the elementary school.
Good morning, boys and girls. This morning, with the cold winds whistling around the corners, may seem to be a poor time to talk about fishing worms, which we ordinarily associate with the much warmer and balmier days of leisure during summer vacation. As a matter of fact, some of my friends have asked me why I have chosen to talk about the earthworms. Are these worms especially friendly, or are there some of them that are unfriendly?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ward Carlson speaking to you from the East Faculty Lounge of the Purdue Memorial Union, where the student chapter of the Institute of Aeronautical Sciences is holding its semi-annual meeting. We are going to bring you a portion of this meeting, which will consist of a roundtable discussion by student members of the chapter and by guests.
The growing pains of a particular department or division are real enough in a large university. They characterize all sections of the campus, it seems. Requests for facilities, space, and personnel to meet the needs now and in the future come regularly and from all directions. And sitting in the middle of all of this is our president, F.L. Hovday. The nature of the situation is such that he, of necessity, must take the broader view of it all. And that is what he will do tonight with the subject, the developmental program of the university. Here is F.L. Hovday.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. I am highly pleased to speak tonight on the Purdue Exchange Program.
The Purdue University School of the Air presents News of the Week. News of the Week is a new program on the Purdue University School of the Air this term. Each week at this time, it will bring you a story from the week's news. These stories are prepared for school children and are designed to give them a better understanding of the world about them.
What is it like to be a freshman? That's the general question we hope to answer in this, the first of the series of two programs on being a freshman, which will feature Mr. Harlan White, directing admissions at Purdue University.
But other areas weren't ignored. Note this classical recording, which was made by WBAA back in the 1940s. We had jazz, big band style. This is a Purdue-based group, the Irv Given Big Band, live at the ballrooms, recorded again in the 1940s by WBAA.
Meet the band of Irv Given. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a grand evening of song and dance with the music of Irv Given and his orchestra playing here for the senior farewell dance of the Chi Omega sorority here in the main ballroom of the Purdue Memorial Union.
And the Purdue Glee Club, circa 1942. Purdue Band, honoring new President Frederick Hovde in 1946.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I take this opportunity to dedicate this new march to our new president. I call it a salute to Hovde. I hope you like it.
And, of course, sports, a big part of WBAA. Here, President Hovde addresses a pep rally prior to the 1948 Purdue-Northwestern football game.
This gathering tonight shows them that we're behind them, and I think all of us here want to say to every member of the team, good luck, and give Northwestern everything you've got.
And specials, such as this interview with Hoosier humorist George Ade, who was one of the benefactors of Ross Ade Stadium.
Today we're visiting in the home of Mr. George Ade. His home is called Hazelden Farm, located about 2.5 miles east of Brook, Indiana.
Or University Vice President R.B. Stewart, discussing the new GI Bill on the American town meeting in 1946.
Town meeting tonight. Is the veteran getting a square deal in education? Here, Dr. Raymond Walters, Donald Kingsley, Dr. Robert B. Stewart, and Chet Patterson on Town Meeting Tonight. From the campus of Rutgers University, one of the 9 colleges founded in colonial times, and now the State University of New Jersey, America's Town Meeting brings you another lively session of a highly controversial subject.
Things kept expanding through the 1950s. More School of the Air programs, more music, and more specials.
This is Salute to the Marquis de Lafayette, the third of a series of programs featuring a half hour of French songs, music, and history dedicated to the memory of the young French general whose bicentennial year is being celebrated throughout France and America.
And even some programs which were sent to other stations, like this Glee Club and Band concert, which was sent to KOA in Denver for an Easter present to Purdue alums in the area.
From the banks of the Wabash to the mile-high city of Denver, Colorado, Purdue University presents a transcribed Easter program featuring the Purdue Glee Club and the Purdue Symphonic Band.
And, of course, interviews with visiting notables, such as Lillian Gilbreth of Cheaper by the Dozen fame. She had earlier, of course, taught at Purdue.
We have with us today Dr. Lillian Gilbreth. Mrs. Gilbreth is the president of Gilbreth Incorporated of Montclair, New Jersey, a firm of management consultants, has long been associated in this field. And I suppose it would be unfair to our listeners to not bring up this the reason that I suppose that the large majority of the American public know you, particularly in relation with the very, very popular and very hilariously funny book, Cheaper by the Dozen.
That's true. Many people seem to have had a great deal of fun.
They certainly
reading
did.
The book, especially children and young people, I'm happy to say.
Or Minnesota Governor Harold Stassen, who would eventually run for president several times, and former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, who were both at Purdue in the late 1950s, for a workshop on international affairs.
6,000 Methodist youth have been meeting on the campus of Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana, for the National Convocation of Methodist Youth. One of the outstanding highlights of the convocation came when Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt, Harold Stassen, and Mr. Nirmal Chaudhry sat before the group and discussed international affairs. What you are about to hear is an excerpt from a press conference in which the panel members summarized their opinions on some vital questions which concern us all.
Governor Stassen, why don't you proceed?
Well, may I first of all say, in speaking to the Methodist youth in this unusual convocation of where thousands have gathered here at Purdue, that in my brief summary statement, I would emphasize a spirit of hopefulness about the world situation.
Now, Mrs. Roosevelt will summarize her contribution.
Well, I'm very glad to have this opportunity to talk to this great gathering of Methodist young people. It seems to me that what Mr. Stassen has just said is almost the backbone of coexistence. Coexistence, I believe, can only come about if we, all of us, are going to put a great deal more strength into the United Nations.
And a Purdue legend, President Emeritus Edward C. Elliott, who was talking about how he built the Hall of Music that bears his name and is the home of WBAA.
How did this building arise?
PWA built it, didn't it?
It didn't. It was built right up inside here.
This was your idea, Bill, putting up the Hall of Music.
Aided and abetted by, and it was due to what I regarded as an initial failure. Because when I came in here, the university began to grow. We had Fowler Hall, which I regard as an old fire trap, but it had room for 1,200, 1,500 people crowded in there. And I conceived the idea of raising it to 3,000. We got the original architects who were still operating in Indianapolis. And to redesign the building, we had an entrance facing the oval, and we were going to extend it toward the library. And I needed $150,000. And I made an appeal to a very wealthy man in this community and got turned down, cold. Then I began to work in a different direction. One thing or another, I made up my mind we had to have an audience room. We had no audience room. And that led finally to this building.
And fine arts programming, such as this recording of the poet Dylan Thomas presenting some of his own works.
Now in this cabin recording, we hear Dylan Thomas reading his lament.
When I was a windy boy in the bit and the black spit of the chapel fold, sighed the old ramrod dying of women. I tiptoed shy in the gooseberry wood. The rude owl cried like a telltale tit. I skipped in a blush as the big girls rolled, ninepin down on the donkey's common.
The upcoming 60s were to be much like Dylan Thomas and his works. Fiery, tempestuous, filled with emotion. A time of expansion, socially, politically, economically. And a time of expansion for WBAA programming.
No, sticks and stones may break your bones, but words can really hurt you.
Words we use. A series of programs exploring the wonderful world of language. Now, let's go up into our language laboratory and meet Mr. Fabian of Cabbages and Kings. The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax, of cabbages and kings. Listen, you.
Yes, listen you, and you will learn how you can become a better listener. At school, at home, everywhere. And here to help you is Mr. Fabian.
Hi. Welcome to Lab 11 of Listen You, the listening laboratory of the air.
The Purdue University School of the Air presents Our Working World, a series designed to introduce young people to the fundamental economic principles that underlie our way of life. And now, here with today's program is Gene Stoner.
Boys and girls.
The Faces of Man. Man has many different faces, for he looks at his world in many different ways. He's a worker, an inventor, a thinker. He has habits and customs and beliefs. Let's find out what they are and what they mean, the many faces of man. The Purdue University School of the Air presents transcribed history highlights. Each week at this time, we bring you stories of some of the people and events that have shaped the world as we know it today. Here now is the story of Rosie the Riveter.
Well, for one thing, he is poor. In the next place, he does not have the vote at his disposal. In the next place, he's not as well educated as he ought to be.
I would say that in the field of race relations, if there's any attitude which characterizes the majority public, it is an attitude of indifference, of not really caring.
It seems to me that there is no question at all of the relatedness of education and housing in terms of the Negro's progress.
I would be willing to venture the prediction that we are going to have desegregation and that gradually this will be translated into a different kind of relationships between the races.
As a wall is built stone on stone, so is a problem composed of many elements, each related to the other. We invite you to join us as we examine some of the major elements making up the problem of the Negro in America, the last citizen. The Last Citizen, the Negro in America, a series of programs devoted to the extension of our knowledge of the largest minority group in the United States, its life, its problems, the problems it poses to all Americans. The Last Citizen is produced by radio station WBAA, Purdue University, under a grant from the Educational Television and Radio Center in cooperation with the National Association of Educational Broadcasters.
Hello, boys and girls. Today we're going to talk some more about the many changes that are taking place all around us now as spring arrives. So, let's all go discovering science.
Discovering Science, a look at the world of science and scientific experiments. Now, if everyone is ready, let's join Mr. Forsyth in the laboratory.
The Purdue University School of the Air presents Transcribed, The Lady Storyteller. Each week at this time, the Purdue University School of the Air presents The Lady Storyteller with a tale of adventure, fun, or fancy.
And here she is now to tell you all about today's story.
Isn't this a wonderful time of the year? Thanksgiving's only a few days away, and everyone's beginning to get ready for the holiday. Our Thanksgiving story today is about a family who had a very different kind of Thanksgiving. The name of our story is The Paley's Talk Turkey.
It was also a time for one of Purdue's great athletic triumphs of all time, and WBAA was there.
This is WBAA's Rose Bowl Special. In 45 minutes, WBAA will bring you the NBC Rose Bowl football game broadcast of the 45th game in this historic series, matching the Boilermakers of Purdue University and the Trojans of Southern California. This is the Boilermakers' first appearance in the New Year's Day Classic, as they represent the Big Ten in the oldest of all of the bowl games. USC teams have performed in the Rose Bowl game 13 previous times. Records of the teams, biographies of the star players, and opinions of sports writers on the eventual winner of today's game have circulated on the press and in radio ever since the football season ended 7 weeks ago. So for the next 45 minutes, this is Johnny DeCamp bringing you by recording the voices of Purdue men most responsible for Purdue's fine season and Rose Bowl trip.
They ask you, when did this football team start a season like this? And I really never thought of it until sitting here tonight. And it all started last December, the Sunday night, December the 5th, 1965, in the Phi Gam fraternity house down in the basement of that fraternity house. When the seniors signed a pledge, the guys that were graduating, that I was a fine football coach, and they gave me their undivided support.
I think Purdue University has done a lot for me, and I want to do one more thing for Purdue, and that's win a Rose Bowl game. Thank you very much.
The cries of triumph at the Rose Bowl mingled with shouts of protest across the United States. Purdue was not isolated from the unrest, even during the celebration of its 100th birthday. Dr. Frederick Hovde's address to the Centennial Convo, which was broadcast by this station, was punctuated frequently by cries of protest.
Exactly 100 years ago today, the people of the state of Indiana, through their duly elected representatives, caused this institution to be established.
Welcome to the Edward C. Elliott Hall of Music for the opening ceremonies of this Founders Day, recognizing the founding of Purdue University. To begin the ceremonies, the president of Purdue University, Dr. Frederick L. Hovde.
This university represents the input, the affectionate work, and the labor and dedication of literally thousands of individuals who believe in education as the salvation of our people.
But Purdue survived, even thrived through the period, and it could rejoice when one of its own became the first man to set foot on the moon.
Well, I'm quite sure that is, as in anyone's life, their basic higher education is the backbone of their experience, from which they've developed all their ideals, crystallized their goals, their hopes for the future, and in my case it was no different. I place my major success and accomplishments as a result of the opportunities that I was given while I was here at this university.
Just as Neil Armstrong's voyage to the moon represented the tremendous changes taking place in the frantic world of the late 60s and early 70s, so too did the WBAA programming evolve. The old school of the air was in its final throes as educational radio stations banded together in a new network in May of 1971.
For Sound Stations. Stay with public radio. National Public Radio.
I'm Greg Zawisha for WBAA's Morning Edition.
And I'm Bob Edwards for National Public Radio's Morning Edition.
Together, we bring you the overnight news, special features, political commentary, sports.
A little bit of a lot of things.
Weekdays from 6 to 8 on WBAA.
And from National Public Radio.
Where would you be without National Public Radio's All Things Considered? Most likely right where you are. It just wouldn't be the same.
National Public Radio has learned that Chief Justice Warren Burger has taken an unusual action to hold up final disposition of the Watergate cover-up appeals.
More confidence in the governmental
So WBAA had to change its programming again, becoming a bit less instructional and a bit more informational and entertainment-oriented. But the specials kept their share of the time, especially when visiting notables spoke.
Ladies and gentlemen, I take sincere pleasure in introducing United States Representative from the 18th Congressional District in New York City, the Honorable Adam Clayton Powell.
I would like to talk about three things tonight. One, I would like to talk about black power. The other, I would like to talk about the student revolution happening in the United States. And third, where do we go from here?
And some of the famous came to honor our own notables, too. Dr. Frederick Hovde retired as president, and at an Indianapolis banquet honoring his years of service and leadership, the nation's leader came to add his plaudits.
Mr. Toastmaster, Governor Whitcomb, Secretary Hardin, Secretary Richardson, Mayor Lugar, all of the distinguished guests here at the head table, and all of the guests and friends of Purdue and of Fred Hovde. I was just thinking as I heard that number how nice it would sound in the Rose Bowl sometime. I understand my remarks are going to delay your dinner, so I will make them brief, but I appreciated the opportunity that was extended to me to attend this dinner, to pay my respects, speaking for all of the people of the United States, to a great university and to one of our truly great educational leaders in America. I do speak for all the people of the United States in this capacity, and I do so with great feeling and a certain amount of experience with regard to the role of this university in America and the role of this man for his country in many capacities and also in this university.
And as one leader left the university, a new leader arrived. This time, he was a Purdue alum finally coming home.
I spent many memorable years of my life here, very exciting ones. It's like coming home. The place has changed. Of course, I have been back on, I think, two separate occasions, but it has changed. I was just telling Vice President Hawkins a few moments ago, we walked past one of the older structures over here, and I asked him how long it had been on the campus, and he said, well, from about the time of the war. And I said, I happen to dig the sewer line that runs underneath that, so it has many fond memories for me to come back here to Purdue and see what's happened. And I think most of all, it represents for me a tremendous challenge, and I'm very humble and very honored to be back.
Another Purdue man became an integral cog in the nation's government.
Born on a farm in Indiana, our guest of honor has always been associated with agriculture and the earth, even to his well-known earthy remarks, which I'm told oftentimes make men grimace and ladies blush. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my privilege to present the Honorable Earl L. Butts.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for that generous introduction, your final introduction, I understand, in this spot. Based on my experience with various organizations, I want to tell you there's nothing faster than a past president. You will learn that next week.
And another, who had been a vital part in the Purdue music scene for so many years, also left finally, and WBAA aired a two-hour tribute to Al Stewart.
He has given generously of his time to develop and maintain the excellent relationship Purdue maintains with its alumni and friends throughout the world. He's had many honors given to him by our state, by our nation, and many foreign countries for his marvelous accomplishments in developing one of the greatest and finest glee clubs in the world. There is no Purdue man who has ever more justly deserved this honor, as he has brought much joy and good fun to many thousands of Purdue alumni and millions of friends of Purdue throughout the world, and has always given most unselfishly of his time. It is with great honor and pride that on behalf of the Purdue Alumni Association, I present to you, Al Stewart, this Distinguished Alumni Award.
And of course, we still air those kinds of specials as times change and as the university prepares for another change in leadership. As more Purdue alums, faculty, staff, and friends receive richly earned rewards, just as they always have. And so that brings us to the familiar sounds of the 70s and 80s.
Concert of your choice. It's your program on Fridays at 1. I'm Carol Matthews, inviting you to join us for the music you request. Your favorite concert music is as close as your phone. So join us for an afternoon of fine listening.
Roger Priest with a quick check of sports.
And we're out of time for this hour of a Wednesday morning, the 31st day of March. I'm Greg Zawisha. Thanks for being along, and stay right here as you can. Good listening still to come. Some new sides of the Jeff Lorber Fusion this morning at 10:30, along with Bill Henderson.
And the emphasis is still on a varied menu of programs, representing the varied tastes of our listeners, and even the varied personalities of the staff members here. For WBAA is still the people who listen to us and the people who work here. Not just Greg Zawisha, Roger Priest, Carol Matthews, or myself. It's not just the people who are heard on the air. It's also the people behind the scenes. General Manager Dave Bunty, engineers Lou Bushfield, Bill Michael, Dwight Valentine, Steve Dunwoody, and Maury Mogridge. It's Secretary Betty Carson. It's Chief Engineer Ralph Townsley, a man who's seen most of the history of WBAA since his arrival here in 1930. And it's all the people who preceded us in these various positions and others. The history of this university is the story of people, and WBAA is an integral part and microcosm of this university.
I think the thing that has impressed me about the station is not only, as we all know, it has served as the sports voice of Purdue, and I think many people recognize that, but it has played several other important roles. I remember talking to one of our trustees going back now 8 or 9 years, and we got to talking about WBAA, and he said that's the way he started the day. Now, he was a farmer, and for him, the information that was given to him as a farmer was very important. And along with that, the news. So that was the way he started the day, and he said he'd been doing this for many, many years. I think the other important, there are two other important things. I've already mentioned one cultural contribution, which is classical music that I think we all enjoy. But beyond that, we have from time to time had WBAA serve as an adjunct to the university, what I would call the educational field, through the broadcasting of very special programs, the fact that it has used, for instance, works from other universities, other places, through the public broadcasting network, I think has been an adjunct, and also in the teaching of courses, too. But more than that, it helps to build an environment at the university. I think the university cannot be considered as just a place where faculty and students come to work and then go home. There's a net environment, and that includes the other activities that one can attend here, the kind of office space you've got, a whole host of things. And as a complement to that, part of that environment is having a radio station that certainly has appeal to faculty. And as we have thought about the role of WBAA, that one really stands out in our mind. And consequently, its quality is important. It's important to why people stay here, why they enjoy the university and its life. And I don't think that perhaps is recognized as often and as well as it should be, that it does form part of the so-called ambience of the university. And we are very thankful for that. It has had a very fine record, and on the 60th anniversary, I could only wish it continued success, not only as the voice of Purdue, but as a real leader in radio in the state of Indiana.
So in the past hour, we've seen some of the changes in WBAA over the years, and in Purdue, and in the world in that same time period. And those programming changes will continue as part of the ever-present responsibility to serve the public and as part of Purdue University. Mark Boardman.